Hello, I'm Andrew Fuller. I'm the chairperson of Generation Next. Generation Next is a charitable organization that interviews eminent people around the world who are specialists in their field and provides these podcasts free of charge for people to really think about well-being and young people and how we can promote mental health. Thank you so much for listening. And today, of course, I'm delighted to speak with Dr. Anna Rubinstein, who has an amazing kind of program or process, Rites of Passage Institute, and we'll talk about rites of passage as they apply to young people and how, of course, in these times that are mixed up and discombobulated and difficult, people are dealing with, of course, quite a substantial amount. So, of course, in the past couple of years, Arne, we've been through a rite of passage for all of us where we've been dealing with pandemics. What would you say is the major effect of that on people?
Yes. Hi, Andrew. Thank you. We certainly have been through a rite of passage, and the pandemic has been a major part of that. And then up here in northern New South Wales, we also had the disastrous floods. My personal opinion is that COVID hasn't actually created the problems that we're seeing in youth mental health. The problems are already there, but it's really exaggerated them. And I think it's made us a lot more aware of what's going on. And the other thing is, it's sort of like almost drawn a line under something and created an opportunity for people in schools to go, all right, how are we going to do this differently? Because clearly what we're doing is not working. Clearly all the research is showing us that, you know, youth mental health is deteriorating over time. And that interestingly, parents, for the first time, MMG research is showing parents are as interested in the wellbeing program at a school as they are in the academic outcomes when they choose where they're going to send their children, which is telling us parents just want to see their kids being okay. They're not worried about their year 12 mark, because also we know that the year 12 mark is not actually the main thing that'll determine their future success. It's actually their life skills. It's their resilience. It's their ability to manage emotions and relationships. They're the things that we have to be focusing on. So I think we actually have a great opportunity at the moment to be doing some fantastic work with our young people that can really support them moving forwards.
I absolutely agree with you. So here you were working merrily away as a doctor, and suddenly you decided to get into this idea of rites of passage. So I'm curious about, you know, what was it, a thunderbolt from the skies? What caused this?
Well, it's a bit of a thunderbolt, actually. I worked, first of all, in general practice, and then I did 15 years as an emergency medicine doctor. And emergency medicine is a very interesting place to work. Anything and everything can walk through the doors or be dragged through the doors or dropped off at the door. And one of the things that I really saw was how many teenagers were coming in to the emergency medical department and how similar their reasons were, which was basically they had done something good to themselves, either in a car or jumping off a cliff into the water, or drugs or fights or risk taking or sex at the wrong time, and we have schoolies and things like that. And I'm like, what is going on here? And then eventually I realized that these young people were trying to create some sort of rite of passage or initiation for themselves into adulthood, and often it was being disastrous. And I started doing all this research and discovered that Indigenous and traditional communities all over the world would create something to support that transition of a young person into adulthood. They all did it. And then it got really interesting when I discovered that they all used the same stages and elements to create that rite of passage or transformation. So there was an underlying framework. And what I did over many years was identify that framework and then go, wow, we could still do this. We could still be working with our young ones. We could create a moment in their development somewhere around puberty where we take them away, school camp or somewhere, and we go through a process of, okay, you're going to become an adult now, and or you're going to start your journey as an adult. And by using the elements of, first of all, sharing the stories of elders with them and getting them to share their own stories with each other, we build community and we pass on wisdom and knowledge. by creating challenges for the young people so they don't have to go out and create their own and end up in emergency, by helping them to create a vision for what sort of adult they want to be, and then importantly, by recognizing and honoring that each of the young people is different and they each have their own unique gifts and talents, genius or spirit. And if we can really see that, name it, and let them know that we admire, are proud of, and love them for who they are, rather than having them think they have to be like what they see on social media. If we do those things, we actually create a transformation. And it's a profound thing to do. And I've been doing this now for over 25 years in Australia and all around the world. And we've had over 350,000 people come through our programs. And I know it creates a transformation. I know it changes people's lives. And our hope is that it will become mainstream once again to create healthy rites of passage for our young people. And it ties in with the three pillars of what we're interested in and what we feel that young people need. And the first is to have a healthy, you know, good sense of belonging, to belong to a good community. So we have to be looking at how do we build healthy communities, to learn critical 21st century life skills like resilience, adaptability, self-management, getting enough sleep, getting enough exercise, having a decent diet. So if we can do the sense of belonging, 21st century life skills, and create a healthy rite of passage rather than having them create their own potentially disastrous one, we can do those things. We can potentially change the course of their lives in a really positive way. Because another thing that I saw as a doctor was older people like our age, Andrew, who were still dealing with the stuff that happened to them when they were teenagers and in their early 20s, and who had no guidance, who certainly didn't have a healthy rite of passage and didn't have a good sense of belonging and often didn't learn basic skills. So that's what we are really focusing on and what I am very passionate about.
So von Ganep and I think and Joseph Campbell and I think Robert Johnson all spoke about rites of passage of having those three stages, separation from your normal way of being, betwixt and between, being all completely confused, and then return or reintegration.
Yeah.
I wonder, would you care to apply that to schools a bit?
Sure. So if we have these three stages of separation, transition or transformation, and then return back into the community, which means we take them away, we put them to a transformational process, and then we bring them back. And the bringing back and the integration is so important because the community needs to recognize that whoever's been through the rite of passage has in fact changed and is in a new place. And I'll just say at this point, rites of passage are not just for children becoming young adults. Rites of passage happen at all stages of our lives. And we look at it a bit like it's a staircase. And we're all moving up that staircase, and each step is actually marked with a rite of passage. So at the same time as our children are going through rites of passage, their parents also need to be going through a rite of passage to let them go and to move into the next stage of their lives. So ideally, the whole community is actually going through a rite of passage at the same time, and everybody's moving up the step. And so it's really important that the community is recognizing what's happening for the young person. And one of the things that we're really working on with schools is school camps. They are the perfect place where the children go away, they can leave their mobile phones behind, but unfortunately, most school camps are activities-based. They go bike riding in the morning, canoeing in the afternoon, the next day they do abseiling, whatever. They come back after 3 or 4 days and the school goes, tick, we've done our outdoor wellbeing program. We love activities, but tied in with that, you know, if we can use those elements I described and get the students sharing their stories with each other, we can get adults or even parents there sharing their stories, that's great. If we create challenges and say, hey, this is a challenge and we're going to learn from this challenge and you're going to face challenges as an adult, so we're going to start practicing challenges and how we deal with them and see what that teaches us about our lives. We learn from our challenges. We can get them on this camp, spending some time creating a vision for who they want to be, what sort of adult they want to be, how they want to be in relationships, what things they know they need to let go of. And then if we can also recognize and honor each of the students for their gifts and talents and genius and spirit, They are the elements of that middle stage of transformation. And then ideally, when they come back to the school, there's a big celebration. The whole school can be out there greeting them. They come back, they share with their peers and their parents if they've made commitments or what they've learned. So it actually becomes, you know, it's a celebration and it's something for the whole community. And when we do that, and I've done it now in many schools in Australia and, as I said before, globally, something special happens, magic happens. And that's why I'm so passionate about this work, because I see the impact it has and I see how it can fit perfectly with not a lot of effort into what we're already doing in schools.
Next question is a bit unfair to you, but because of course these are valuable throughout. But if you had to pick one phase of school where you think this process is particularly valuable, which one would you pick?
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that question. The big one I would pick, it's that puberty one around about somewhere between 13 and 15 when they're taking those first steps into adulthood. And what we do is we say teenagers, oh, they're just a teenager. And we sort of abandon them for a few years and hope they'll get through it and grow out of it and become well-balanced adults who've got it all together and know everything like we do. You know, and it's actually the highest risk and most dangerous time for young people is that period between 13 and 17. It's when mental health issues can peak. It's when risk-taking behavior peaks. It's when suicidal ideations are strongest. It's when families break down. And we really need to be addressing that particular age and doing it beautifully rather than just going, oh, you know, go through it, work it out, and then come back and talk to me on the other side. And actually, a lot of kids never talk to their parents again really openly and fully after that period, because there can be so much damage done in those few years if they're just not managed.
So the process of reintegration, where the community recognize the changed person, what do you find is a useful process for doing that, generally speaking?
Yeah, it's a great one, because if a young person's been on this incredible transformation, they come back, no one treats them any differently or no one sees them differently, the danger is they get pushed back into that previous behavior. So it's really important in a school, for example, that all the staff know that the students have been away. And hopefully when they come back, there is a big celebration for them. So we work with schools and we say, instead of the kids coming back, getting off the bus and going home, what if we have the whole school out there? What if we have the parents there? What if we do a beautiful ceremony when they come back? And then hopefully in the school, those students get more privileges, but they also have more responsibilities. And they know about that because it's been talked about. And the parents, you know, if we can do some work with the parents while the students are away, tell them what's happening, talk to them about the theory of a rite of passage. And then often we will give the students and parents a 4 to 6 week program to do at home. So once a week, they have a check-in together. And on the first week, they might talk about, you know, are there any commitments or things that they want to do differently now that they've been on this program, both children and parents. And we get the parents to share some stories about when they were that age and what they loved doing and their relationship they had with their own parents. Also what they got in trouble for or what went wrong. And we get them talking, you know, we give them an opportunity where the students talk with their parents about what are the things that you want to be able to do now that you weren't allowed to do before, and what extra responsibility are you going to take in order to do that? And we get them creating a vision together, you know, the young adults and their parents, about how would they like their relationship to be in 5 or 10 years' time.
Fantastic.
And then the other thing we get is we get the parents acknowledging the things that they really love and are proud of about their children, but also the students acknowledging to their parents what they're grateful for and what they admire about their parents. So it's like they do another level of the rite of passage when they come home. And then hopefully from that, things really change and they can move up to a more mature relationship, so that when the young person is 20, 25, 30, their parents are not still treating them like they're 8 years old.
I want to just take our shift a little bit away from younger people towards the staff working in schools for a moment. So we've had a period of disruption where we've unintentionally, but that's often how it occurs, separated from our normal way of being.
Yeah.
And we've been in a phase of kind of all at sea, really. And I guess my impression has been that lots of schools have tried to revert back to business as usual. And I wonder whether not capitalizing on the opportunities inherent in this time leaves a sort of hole in the heart of some educators, really, in terms of the idea that really we need to grow and develop in a much more powerful way. I'm not sure if you'd like to comment on that.
Oh, love to comment on that, because I couldn't agree more. Business as usual is a major mistake. If you've been through a transformation and then you try and say, oh, let's go back to before the transformation, why would you? You know, things are different and staff are on survival mode. I mean, they were already on survival mode before COVID and everything happened. And now we've just put a heap more on them. And they're also dealing with young people who had, you know, 1 or 2 years basically out of school. And absolutely, it has to be done differently. And the number one thing that we're seeing as an issue is staff well-being. And in what we're doing, staff well-being really has to tie into this. And the principles of, you know, creating a space where the staff can actually genuinely share what's going on for them, supporting staff to actually create a well-being plan for themselves. It's like what you and I talked about before this, we had a few minutes before the podcast. We need to be supporting and encouraging our staff to recognize that their own personal health and well-being is critically important. And the more healthy and better they feel, the better they will actually be as teachers and staff members in the school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, helping and encouraging and actually supporting them to do whatever it is for them to be healthy is so important. And not just loading on more and more. You know, what we see with schools, unfortunately, is there's another thing and it comes in on top of everything else. And what we actually, I believe, need to be doing is less. There's just too much stuff going on. I just see everyone is exhausted. Everyone is working way too many hours. Our phones mean that we're accessible nearly 24 hours a day and on the weekends. And at some point, and I'm seeing schools who are doing this. There are early adopters who are going, you know what? We're not just going to do business as usual. We're going to look at this differently. And especially given that the research now shows that the year 12 mark, the final academic result, is not the main determinant of future success. And what that means is we don't can academics. It's still really important, but well-being is being recognized as actually critically important. And so, you know, we provide the learning opportunities for the students and for everyone, but we also now, I believe, need to be giving equal priority to well-being. And if we can do that, if we can actually come back to a genuine form of well-being, which is based on a healthy community and support and all of those things, we actually can turn it around. But, you know, the system is very much pushing schools in a particular direction. So it takes courage and bravery from a school to say, we're going to do this differently. But more and more, we're finding that schools are going, we have to. We have to do it differently and we can do it differently.
So I'd just be interested or intrigued by you casting your mind around the future corner and thinking about where you'd like to take all of this thinking and experience and wonderful work that you're doing. How could we expand it or scale it to a broader range of schools or communities?
Great. Well, I think the first part is education and just people knowing about it, because people want change, but it's like if you don't know how to change, then that makes it a lot more difficult. So first of all, just the more we can get it out there and talk about, you know, rites of passage, building communities, factoring well-being into our lives, that's a big thing. And I think we're going to see, we have to see a big change in the education system. It has to be based much more on, rather than trying to say every student has to go down the same funnel, and if they can't fit in that funnel, that student's a problem, and and you know, it's the wrong school for them or something like that. We have to realize that, you know, every kid's different and does it in different ways. Project learning, collaborative programs, and also accepting that school is not even for every student. You know, I meet so many parents who the only thing they can do for their children is to just do anything they can to get them through school, because once they finish school, that's when the world opens up. And why do we have to wait until they're 17, 18 for the world to open up? So when we can start recognizing there are kids who maths is just not their thing, but they're brilliant artists, or they're brilliant with cars, or they're fabulous musicians, or, you know, and just to understand that there are multiple ways towards success. I think that is, you know, that's where those schools are where parents are going to be looking for to send their children. And also genuinely acknowledging that staff well-being, you know, school teachers, that's one of the noble professions, being a teacher and a teacher of children, and they are not treated nobly. You know, they're actually treated terribly. So somehow that has to shift. And it also, we have to move from this separation of, you know, here's the executive of the school at one level, and then here's the staff at the next level, and here's the students at the next level, and here's the parents over here at some other level, that actually the staff are human beings and the students need to be able to relate to them, so that it moves from more of a teacher to a mentor supporter, who is, you know, an equally important part of the whole ecosystem.
Mm.
That's quite a change, but it's actually, I know that it's doable because I've seen it happen. And I think more and more it has clearly been recognized. We know there's a problem, and hopefully we're slowly starting to address it. And my hope is that this, as I said, becomes mainstream, that all students and all people go through healthy rites of passage. We all learn critical life skills, and we're all part of a healthy community that's supporting us.
As somebody who keeps banging on about, probably ad nauseum, about learning strengths and differentiation for different types of smarts, this, of course, is music to my ears. So thank you.
Yeah, and it's always great, Andrew, when it's said in different, the same thing is said in different ways. And you mentioned earlier about Robert Johnson and the hero's journey and Van Gennep. They're all saying the same thing, that we periodically need to go through these transformational processes, call it a rite of passage, to move from one stage in life to the next. And, you know, it's
this is something that's been spoken about since Homer's time, isn't it? So
yeah, it's, well, even before, every Indigenous community independently worked out,
true,
we need to be creating rites of passage for people in life.
Yes. So should people be interested in following up and getting some more information from you, what's the best way that they could do that?
It's through our website, the ritesofpassageinstitute.org, rites spelled R-I-T-E-S. And we work in schools around the country and globally. We have camps that we run up here. I have 150-acre property in Byron Bay, and we do father-son camps for 14 to 17-year-old boys with their dads. We do father-daughter camps, mother-son camps, mother-daughter, all a whole range of camps for children from 8 to 17 years of age. I do a lot of public speaking in schools and in corporate arena. And the other big thing is we do a three-day leadership training where we train people in the framework of a rite of passage so that they can do their own rite of passage for themselves or their family or their people at work or their community. They can do their own program in their own way, in their own community, because we recognize that if this is going to go into the mainstream, we have to be open source, we have to give it away as much as we can and have as many people aware of it. So it's the website, ritesofpassageinstitute.org.
Thank you for a wonderful conversation. I want to honor the work that you do. I think it's incredibly fundamental, and I don't mean that in a diminishing way. I mean, it's so essential to the changes of people's lives that without it, we end up having a hollowness that shows up in all of the types of pathologies and difficulties that we've alluded to in this conversation. Thank you, Arne.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Andrew.
Thank you.
Find more resources for supporting the mental health and well-being of young people on the Generation Next website. While you're there, consider becoming a member of the Online Learning Hub, where you can access practical sessions from leading experts on demand. There are many sessions available in the ever-expanding learning library, and each session has an instantly downloadable certificate of completion, which you may even be able to use to claim professional development. You can also feel great about your membership, with all proceeds supporting Generation Next's not-for-profit initiatives, including this podcast. You may also like to read more in Generation Next's Young Minds books. Both books contain practical and easy-to-read chapters on a range of topics from Australia's leading practitioners. Andrew Fuller's chapter, What is Resilience and How to Do It, is in the book Growing Happy, Healthy Young Minds, available on the Generation Next website at www.generationnext.com.au. We hope you found this podcast helpful. Please share this podcast and your learnings with others. Until next time, thanks for listening and for all you do to support young people and our communities.